welcome, everybody, to another edition of Sports with Friends. My name is Seth Everett. I'm the friend that you have. And if you're not my friend, I don't know why you're listening. Today, we have a very special guest. We're going to have a lot of fun with this gentleman. You know, when I started in sports radio, when back in my day, 20 years ago, they always told you two things. They said that if you were ever doing a radio show and there was something that you didn't have a good topic, you didn't have anything going on, it was a dead sports day, two topics you could bring up at any moment and it would invoke passion from fans. Pete Rose and Casey Martin. Casey Martin was the guy who, if you remember, petitioned the PGA to allow him to drive a golf cart during a PGA event. That drew an ire from a lot of people. The other one was, should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame? Well, recently, Pete Rose applied for reinstatement in baseball. See, the rule is, the Hall of Fame is a separate entity. The Hall of Fame is a museum. It's a lovely museum. Actually, the president of the Hall of Fame, Jeff Idelson, has been on this podcast. Based on that logic, Pete Rose is not eligible because he's not on the ballot because he's on baseball's banned list. He has to get off the banned list to be eligible for the Hall of Fame. Let's clear that myth up first. But Pete Rose was denied in what was the easiest thing decision Rob Manfred has ever had to make. This was not even a dramatic development, but it has still brought out the ire of the sports fan. I recently was on television with this gentleman. He is a New York Times best-selling author. I know him from Sports Illustrated. I've followed his work throughout time. He's written a novel. It's not a novel. It's not fiction. He's written a book, Pete Rose, An American Dilemma. He is Kostya Kennedy, and he is on Sports with Friends today. Kostya, thanks so much. Happy holidays. Welcome to the podcast.
Happy holidays. It's good to know it's 20 years later and things have not changed. We can still talk a little Pete Rose.
It's amazing. Like, if you had, I remember one day I was in Denver, Colorado, working for Sports Radio, the fan out there in Denver, and I think the Broncos were done. Spring training hadn't started. I didn't have a topic, and someone called up and said, do you think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame? Done. Show's over.
Right, exactly.
That was the way he goes. And I kind of want to start it there. Why is he so polarizing?
Well, you know, the subtitle of my book, as you mentioned, is An American Dilemma. And I can't think of another sports figure that there's such a genuine dilemma about their place in history and how we think about him. Some people have a very simple, quick answer on Pete, but they probably haven't really thought about it because he played, as you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but he played baseball with such great integrity, not only through his hustle, but this guy was literally the first guy out, whether he was a rookie or when he was the highest paid player in baseball. He's taking batting practice. He's hitting 15 line drives to left, 15 to center, 15 to right. He's laying down a bunt. You know, his whole way of playing, this guy would go first to third on a single to left again and again and again. He didn't have great speed, just slightly above average, because he watched exactly where the left fielder was. He got a great read. He was the consummate player, and he helped his teammates. He helped players on other teams. I mean, they just loved him. He ate and breathed baseball and was everything you'd want in a baseball player. And then he goes and he bets not once or twice, but chronically and dangerous amounts of money, clearly endangering the game on his own team as a player and then as a manager, which basically cuts to the integrity the other way. It's like the least integrity you could show. So he presents this real dilemma. And I think there's so many different ways we can look at him and talk about him that's kind of what has sustained the conversation. And as much as it is the bottom line, it's a very much the same conversation as it was 20 years ago. It's also changed quite a bit. And Pete's had this really unusual, somewhat entertaining, somewhat tragic second act. And his just new reinstatement to baseball with all the stops along the way has changed his figure, even if the final bottom line dilemma still kind of remains the same.
It's a fascinating idea. Take us through your history. I know a lot of this stuff because I've seen the book, but for our audience, when did you start? I'm not trying to date you here.
Oh, no problem.
Here's a perfect example. I'm in my 40s. I have been covering baseball. I'm about to start my 20th year. But I've never, Pete Rose was banned by the time I got into the business. What was your interaction with Pete? How did you first come to be aware of the case? Did you cover his initial suspension? What's your involvement in the whole thing?
So his initial suspension is before my time also, although I remember it as a kid, it happening. But sure. I came to it. So I'd written a little bit here and there, just as in sports radio, Pete was a topic. I would write scorecard at Sports Illustrated at front of the book section, and I did a couple of essays on Pete and the dilemma as things came up with Bud Selig and all that. But I really got to know Pete about 2009, 2010 maybe. I was doing a book on Joe DiMaggio called 56, so about DiMaggio's hitting streak in 1941. And since DiMaggio...
Sitting on my bookshelf right now.
Oh, I love it.
Too bad this is not a video podcast.
I trust you, though. I trust 100%. Okay. And since 41, nobody's even gotten to 40-game hit streak. The only one who's done that is Pete Rose in 1978. And right. So he'd had that hit streak, and he also had a relationship with DiMaggio. It's kind of a bizarre relationship, but they went to Vietnam on a Goodwill tour together. And so I wanted to go and interview Pete, not really to do with Pete's situation at all, but for my DiMaggio book. And I did that. I sat next to him where he was working in Las Vegas, signing autographs. And I sat beside him for about a 5-hour autograph session. And a couple of things happened there, Seth. One was, first of all, he's super entertaining. People are like...
Oh, he's magnetic. He's fascinating.
Yeah, so people are really paying for his autograph. Yeah, but they're really paying to have you 5 minutes with Pete. So he can slightly insult you with a joke, and he can remember some at-bat from 1971 or whatever it might be. But during the session, he has a TV set up on the table where he's signing, and on that TV are the horse races from Hollywood Park. Now, it's a Thursday afternoon. This is not the Kentucky Derby. Who's watching these races? Somebody who's betting on it, of course. And during the interview, every now and then, he would reach into his pocket and pull out a huge wad of cash, peel out $400 or $500 bills, and have a store employee go place a bet on him. Remember, we're in Vegas, so it's just 100 feet or 200 feet from a betting window. He did that throughout the afternoon, which, you know, I bet on horse races. Maybe you have. Plenty of people do. No big deal. But if you're Pete Rose and you're banned for gambling and you're in a public place and there's a journalist next to you with a notebook out, maybe you don't want to do it. But he had no compunction about it, just absolutely doing it. And at the end of our time together, I hadn't asked him anything about his gambling or anything to do, but he just brought up to me, said, you know, that's all the betting I do. It's just on horse races, not on sports or anything like that. That was completely not true, but
he's lying.
He's
right.
Lying.
You know it. If you know him, he's
right.
Lying.
But I didn't care. I said, okay, Pete, that's fine. Like that was not my purpose there at all. But I saw how much at that moment, it kind of came to me like how much this whole thing is sitting on him and how heavy a burden it's been. He created a burden himself, so this is an expression of sympathy or that he doesn't deserve to have that burden. But he created that burden, and it sits on him now. At that point, it was 20 years later, 22 years later from when it all went down. That and also seeing the way people reacted to him. It's not like when you see Willie Mays or Tom Seaver or somebody where people are just basically cleanly overjoyed and go over and, oh my God, I have these memories. With Pete, there was great passion, but there was also a sort of hesitancy. You know, he's this outlaw hero. And all of those things conspired to sort of lead me to want to write this book and explore what's happened to this guy over the period of time. And also going back into this whole dilemma, and there's a generation of fans that don't really understand the Hall of Fame issue that you alluded to at the top.
Right.
I mean, and that to me, just to quickly get this out there, I don't have a position on whether somebody should vote for him or not vote for him for the Hall of Fame. I can really honestly see it both ways. He was such a great player, but he also did something, you know, which wasn't like me saying, hey, Seth, I'll bet you $50 on the game. He owned $500,000 to Sal from Staten Island, which is not what you want to do, right? So I see it both ways. But it was in 1991 when the Hall of Fame passed the rule to make him ineligible. You know, when Bart Giamatti, the commissioner, banned Pete, baseball writer said, hey, well, this affects his Hall of Fame eligibility. And Bart just looked at them, the actual voters, and said, well, that'll be up to you. You know, you guys will decide whether he gets in the Hall of Fame or not. But Bart then died, and the Hall of Fame board got it in their head. They didn't want to run the risk that of having Pete on the ballot. And they made up a rule completely arbitrarily. If you're on baseball's ineligible list, you can't be eligible for the Hall of Fame. There's one player in baseball history, one, Pete Rose, who that rule has affected. Shoeless Joe Jackson was on the ballot for 50, 55 years. He never got in. Right. He got some votes. And that, to me, is a great injustice. If Pete had been on there, maybe he wouldn't have gotten the votes. You know, maybe he'd only get 30%, 40%. Who knows? Maybe he'd get 2%. But maybe he would have gotten in. And that was the great injustice of the Hall of Fame and really against the whole democratic process and ideal of the Hall of Fame to do that to him. And it was very small-minded. Faye Vincent was largely behind it. And to me, that's the only real gripe I have. I don't think that he deserves anything in particular, but yeah.
There's a couple of things there. Number one, here's an old myth. If Bart Giamatti doesn't pass away, is Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame?
Well, for the reason we just talked about, I don't think that he would have. The Hall of Fame is separate from Major League Baseball, so technically the commissioner does not have power.
But no, but they let Steve Howe back in baseball seven times.
Absolutely. Whether or not
I think that if Bart Giamatti's alive, they give him a second chance.
Well,
I think Faye Vincent was afraid to sully the legacy of what Bart Giamatti had done.
It's a very good point, and I can't say you're wrong. You very well might be right. I think that it's clear that Bart would not have allowed the Hall of Fame to pass that rule. He would have exerted his pressure to not allow that happen, the opposite of what Faye Vincent did, which was to push it through. In terms of letting him back in, the fact that Pete still bets on baseball and bets on baseball to this day, that would have been very difficult for Giamatti to have overlooked. And I don't think he would have just said, again, in some ways it's even worse than a cocaine habit, which is what Steve Howe had, because you're threatening the legitimacy of a game. So I'm not so quick to say he would have let him back in. I agree with you, he would have been much more open-minded and wouldn't have been conflicted the way Faye Vincent was, but I still think it would have been a tough call to let a known baseball bettor back in the game.
Well, it's the interesting aspect of the whole thing. In doing the research for this book, who did you talk to from the Hall of Fame? Is there any thought? See, my argument with the Hall of Fame goes way deeper than Pete Rose.
Right.
And Jeff Idelson, who's been on this podcast before, he knows this argument. So this is not going to come as any great surprise. I think it's ridiculous that the baseball, the Hall of Fame vote is done through a union of baseball writers that was conceptualized during a time when baseball writers comprised of 90% of the media.
Right.
Considering the print media, and I love print media, I love the baseball writers, this is not against them, but the fact that radio and television do not have a chance to sniff the Hall of Fame, Vince Scully only has a Hall of Fame vote because he's in it. And he doesn't even get in the main ballot.
Well, but
it's absurd.
He's employed by the Dodgers, so I have no problem. I think that online, of course, bloggers, and if you've covered a team for more than 5 years.
But bloggers is a fine line. I think it's accredited. I think that your years have to be accredited. If baseball will accredit your media outlet and grant you a credential, that counts as a year towards your eligibility.
I like the argument, and I think it's fine. I would diverge on anybody who's employed by a team. So Vince Scully, who works for the Dodgers, to me should never have a vote. Neither should anybody who's employed by a team have a vote. I think
Carl Ravitch should have a vote. Bob Costas should have
a vote.
Absolutely. I understand the fine line about MLB.com. I understand it. I know there was a lot of grandfathering that took place. I understand now if you want to apply it to electronic, MLB Network is compromised. I understand. I get that. And this is not to be self-serving. Like I said, I'll sleep easy never having a Hall of Fame vote. I do think that the Hall of Fame vote, if you allowed broadcasters in it, would be a more liberal vote. I think it's too conservative a vote. I think Jack Morris would be in the Hall of Fame. I think Tim Raines would be in the Hall of Fame. If broadcasters could vote, there would be more Hall of Famers.
Now, there might be, and I don't know if that's a good thing. I'm totally happy to have the system change, so I'm not wedded to the old. I don't have a vote. I vote in the Internet Baseball Writers Association, and I fill my ballot in every day, every year, sorry. So I agree with you. It can be expanded in a methodical way. I think that for the most part, guys who should be in, get in, and guys who shouldn't. We can have the Jack Morris argument. We can have the Tim Raines argument, and I hear it.
We could do that on a separate – let's do that next month on a separate
let's
podcast.
Let's do it. I'd love to do it.
That would be fun.
Let's knock it out. That'll be great. But I think, you know, again, I do think it's still basically, as I was saying earlier, a democratic process. You have a lot of voters, and they make some mistakes, but for the most part – they let guys in. And I kind of like the idea that it's exclusive. I have a little bit of high standards. That's my personal taste, and you have your personal taste. That's the beauty of the whole thing. But I, you know, 1% of Major League players make the Hall of Fame, and that's part
of
what makes
it
special.
No, I get it. I like the standard. I want that standard. Jack Morris is still a Hall of Famer. That,
right. I see. I'm looking forward to it.
That's my argument.
You know?
You know, if Burt Blyleven's a Hall of Famer, and I agree, Burt Blyleven is a Hall of Famer. Tim Raines, my best example. Tim Raines was Ricky Henderson light. He did everything Ricky Henderson did. He just wasn't Ricky Henderson. That's not a knock. Tim Raines was one of the greatest outfielders to ever play this game. He's a Hall of Famer. I agree with you on the standards. So the argument is such that. Baseball, the Hall of Fame itself has that rule, mm-hmm. and they have this antiquated, they don't want to change anything. Here's my theory. This is just a theory.
Yep.
That year, a couple of years ago, when there were no Hall of Fame inductees, mm-hmm. they almost went belly under. Like they, or it's belly up, right?
Right.
They almost went under belly up. They were in financial despair. And I was wondering whether or not the museum would eventually shut down. If the museum shuts down, what is this ballot? What is the Hall of Fame? Pete Rose is a Hall of Famer. Roger Clemens is a Hall of Famer. It doesn't make a difference. If the museum's not around, there is no Hall of Fame. Based on that logic, I think there will be a financial crisis. And it'll be the first thing that the Hall of Fame can do. It's the panic button. It's the only thing left to then say, we need to change this. They'll build a wing. It'll be a separate hallway. It'll be an annex. They'll do something, and Pete Rose will be there. Barry Bonds will be there. Joe Jackson will be there. They'll all be there. I think that when we look at history, they'll all eventually be in the Hall of Fame. It's a museum. It's a business. We know how businesses work.
Well, it depends what you're talking about, because obviously Pete and Joe are in the Hall of Fame now in terms of their artifacts, and you're going
right,
to their stories.
Stories.
So,
right, their stories.
So the Hall of Fame, and I don't think they should have this power, they don't have the power to just put somebody in the Hall of Fame. Whoever the voting populace is still going to have to, I think, would still have to vote somebody in. Now, again, any rule can be changed, and we've seen that, and so nothing is fixed. But I think that's important to the integrity and part of what makes it such a big deal. Like it's not such a big deal to be in the Football Hall of Fame. I mean, yes, it is, and of course to football players it is, but it doesn't have that mystique the way it does, the way baseball does. Hockey has a little bit of that among it's a smaller fan base, obviously. It's the closest thing I think to the Baseball Hall of Fame. But you know, I don't think they're just going to start putting guys in. I think that would be dangerous to do that.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, to hear this discussion, and let's kind of bring it back to Pete Rose. You mentioned Pete Rose bets on baseball to this day. Pete Rose was recently asked to be on Fox Television.
Mm-hmm.
All you need to know about Pete Rose is that he took off World Series games. World Series games. Because he had to do a card sign.
Well, I mean, I know that whole thing, and it's Pete was not even employed to do the World Series, Seth. He was hired for a certain number of dates, and he was good enough. They liked him enough in regular season that they started adding him to the postseason. So it wasn't as if he all of a sudden said, hey, I'm on the schedule, I can't do it. They wouldn't commit to him. They wouldn't tell him what his schedule was. And yeah, and then Pete had that sort of weak spot. Once he told somebody he's going to do something, and this was true even at an event for him in Cincinnati. He had booked to do a card show one night and said he couldn't make the event in Cincinnati at the ballpark. He went ahead and did it. So it's not Pete didn't take the game off in that sense. I don't think he would, but he did. You know, he wasn't going to pass up the card signing opportunity.
The card, but if Pete Rose genuinely thought that it was his number one priority, my whole point is it is not Pete's passion to get back in baseball. It's the fans' passion.
Absolutely.
Pete is living a comfortable life. Pete doesn't need the World Series. I'm sorry. If Pete was obsessed with getting his name back in baseball, and getting into the Hall of Fame as fans of Pete Rose are, he tells that card company we have to reschedule.
No, you're right. I think you hit on a good point. I think that it does matter somewhat to Pete, but not the way it mattered to the legions of fans. And another thing about this recent affirmation by Rob Manfred to uphold the ban, in many ways, I think it opened the door for Pete. I mean, there was no way that Manfred could have let him in once he said he bet on baseball. But Manfred was clear to say that he didn't want to stand in the way of any ceremony, to say that he thought that the requirements for playing, being involved in baseball and entering a given Hall of Fame were different.
Were different.
And he
yeah,
went out of his
different.
Way to put that in there. He's sending a message. He thinks the whole Hall of Fame decision was poppycock right. also. And you were going to see Pete go into the Reds Hall of Fame over the next couple of years. Now, I know that's a little like this is Spinal Tap, right? You know, you can't play the Garden. You get to play the puppet show instead. But to that point, and we're going to see a statue go up outside Cincinnati. In some ways, I think we're going to see Pete even more around baseball, and that was the subtext of the ruling by Manfred. It's to kind of say, hey, I'm not looking to bury this guy. I just can't open my door to somebody who's been an addicted gambler for a quarter century and is betting on my sport.
Let's go into a new tangent here, and let's welcome in something that came up on the Newsmax segment that you and I did.
Yep.
And I wanted to get your take. You know, when we did the TV segment, it was, you know, 4 minutes. We didn't have time to expand on this. An argument that I had made, and I wanted to get your response to, was this idea that leagues are sponsoring fantasy sports.
Mm-hmm.
I have an issue. I don't mind fantasy. I had an issue with fantasy during my time. I will just tell you my history with this. I used to work for MLB. I used to work for MLB.com. I thought it was ridiculously hypocritical of baseball to authorize fantasy content, fantasy shows. The show in between mine and the only other show on MLB Radio was a show called Fantasy 411.
Right.
How can baseball have that? Yahoo can have that. Sports Illustrated can have that. NBC can have that. I don't care. Major League Baseball can't have it. And the NFL is guilty, too. The NFL has their fantasy articles on. You should not be getting fantasy advice from NFL.com. It's not appropriate. To me, it is the great hypocrisy in sports. What's your reply to that? What's your thought about the idea that if you're going to have DraftKings be a major sponsor of Major League Baseball, well, then Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame.
I share a lot of your criticisms with the conflict of interest of supporting these leagues, but they're not saying you can't play fantasy in the NHL, for example. If you're a player or a coach, you're not allowed to play fantasy. So it's a different, it is slightly different from having an active player do it. In the NFL, which has embraced and wholeheartedly wrapped its arm around gambling, which has supported the NFL and lifted it to the place where it's at even before fantasy, you're still not allowed to bet if you're a player or a manager or a coach or whatever it may be. So what Pete did is still out of bounds. But in terms of the sponsoring team, I agree. I mean, I just think there's so much money there that they don't know what to do about it, you know? And I think the NBA is clearly, who've been kind of at the forefront of this issue, they're aware that gambling, they believe gambling will be legal at some point. They see the trend to this in the global games and the people are betting on American sports all over the world, except for in America, with the exception, of course, of Las Vegas, of Nevada. So I think they're just going, it's a sign of the times. But I agree that there is a clear hypocrisy that clearly is gambling. The NFL had a very strong lobbyist behind the decision to keep fantasy sports legal in 2006 when internet gambling was officially made illegal. They argued to have fantasy exempted from that, and they knew exactly what they were doing. That's why you put on a football game on Thursday night and you have rating through the roof. It's because of two things. It's because of gambling and because of fantasy. That's why people are watching blowouts to the end of the fourth quarter, because their quarterback's going to pick up some garbage time points in fantasy. So I think it's paying players' salaries in many ways, and it's too big a thing for leagues to get away from. They're afraid of not owning that territory.
Where do you see that going? I mean, daily fantasy has hit a kind of a wall. They've got a legal issue after the first of the year. There's going to be rulings. The New York State District Attorney already banned daily fantasy, mm-hmm. which I would say, and I think this is a huge part of their appeal. Why is daily fantasy banned? But yet I could set up a Yahoo League tonight.
Meaning a Yahoo season-long league?
I could do a season-long league, so I don't want to play. There's no shortage of fantasy. The two things that help gambling, and the thing that took the stratosphere from the NFL from, at hot to boiling, was the existence of the internet and the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you can do these things on the iPhone, to me, changed the whole aspect of this whole thing. Everyone can bet. That's why these games are getting, consumed the way they are. It's very different than when you or I grew up. When we grew up, I had football pools.
Mm-hmm.
Some kid would cut out the lines, and he would make a Xerox copy of 50 of them, and he would give them out. You had to give him $5, and you picked your games.
Mm-hmm.
And then with some guy that had to tally it. Now that's all online. Like, that's literally all online.
Right.
That's where I think this has all changed.
You're absolutely right. It's made a much bigger business. It's made it much more in people's consciousness. Kids grow up and they're fans of teams, but they have their fantasy teams. Whether or not they're actually betting real cash at age 9, 10, or 11, they still have their team that they've put together. Fantasy has been and right now is basically a gateway drug to gambling. It is gambling, of course, but I don't know how it's going to shake out, because you have some really powerful lobbies. You have the lobby in Vegas, the American Gaming Association, and they're not really sure how to feel about this. They don't like fantasy in some ways because it takes away from their business, and why is that legal and we're not? But they also recognize the power of it, the big debate in Vegas is, are we going to run our own fantasy leagues? Are people going to come out here and do that as well as all their betting? It's certainly driven the increase in proposition betting out there. And you can now, 20 or 30 prop bets on every football game, and there's 450 on a Super Bowl, meaning betting on individual players and how they'll do versus another individual player. So it's a big tangle of ethical issues. And a very strong lobbyist with a lot of money at stake, and we're going to see how things shake out. But I agree that the prevalence of this is definitely a concern, and it's a slippery slope to, you and I putting together a little fantasy team in our living room and people betting big money on whether a guy's going to score a certain number of points, and that getting to a point where it could compromise the game.
So based on that logic and, tying it back into Pete Rose, is that where the Pete Rose sympathizer comes from? There's a generation of people who think that Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame that didn't see him play.
Mm-hmm.
There are working professionals that didn't see him play. Mm-hmm. Who knows how many people listening to this podcast right now who saw Pete Rose play?
Mm-hmm.
To say that he was a great player, it's very understated. You never see him being compared to. When you talk about, young players that are coming up, no one is compared to people.
Well, Bryce Harper. We got that from Bryce Harper. We got a little bit from Dustin.
Really? Pete Rose, really?
Yeah, Bryce's dad was a huge Pete Rose fan. He said that he loved Pete. But anyway, I understand what you're saying, that you know, Pete is seen as two things. He was very good as a player, but his commitment, as we talked about earlier, and the way he played, here's a guy who played more than 500 games at five positions and was an all-star at each one of them, right? He'd do whatever it took. It's just absolutely incredible. And so in the record book, he's going down next to guys like Cobb and Mays and all of that. And the thing about Pete is he was talented. You don't make it to the major leagues without being talented. But when you're talking about being the all-time hit leader, 4,200 hits, I mean, the guy, he wasn't that good, and he wasn't 1,200 hits better than the next guy, right? And yes, there was a little bit of compiling at the end, but not as much as people say. That gets overblown quite a bit if you go and look at how he did at the end of his season. There was about a season and a half where he was not productive, but that's pretty much it. And, you know, so he really was a unique player. Plenty of players had more talent. Plenty of players did things that were valuable. But if you look at even what other guys say, so Mike Schmidt, right, this great Hall of Famer, he will talk your ear off about how Pete Rose changed his career, came into Philadelphia and made this guy from a guy who played 3 days a week to a guy who played 7 days a week. When Joe Morgan was a all-star caliber, somewhat malingering player, traded from the Astros to the Reds, the first thing Sparky Anderson did was say, Joe, you're going to lock her right next to Pete Rose. And that changed Joe Morgan's career, and he'll tell you about that too. It made him play hard every day and made him go from an all-star caliber player to being a Hall of Famer. Pete's impact on the game beyond the numbers and beyond the great feats and the great highlights is incalculable. And you get that when you go and you talk to people who played with him. It's not that I'm making it up or glorifying it. You go and look at what was written about at the time about the impact he had and what players say today who played with him.
It's an interesting aspect because you notice that just the subject of Pete Rose comes into the Hall of Fame. Who gets into the Hall of Fame? I knew when we said we were going to do this, there would be a steroid discussion. Mm-hmm. There would be a DraftKings FanDuel discussion. You know that the different aspects, it has become its own animal. It really has become a fascinating dialogue about this. One thing I want to say, and I would love it if you could expand on this kind of in closing, I don't want to sound like, when I call Pete a degenerate gambler, mm-hmm. I don't want to sound like I don't like him.
Mm-hmm.
I find him to be enjoyable. I actually did an interview with him right before we started the podcast for a company that he was promoting. And I remember having that interview, and I listened back to it. I should get the audio and put it on the podcast. That's what I should do. But this idea that you're talking about a guy who has a problem, if it's a problem, you know, there's this whole thing about, you know, people who are addicted to alcohol. If it's not something that, damages his life or disturbs his existence, what's the big deal? That he's allowed to do whatever he wants. He's a grown man. He's an adult. Who are we to judge whether he bets on baseball or not?
I couldn't agree more. I just think from baseball standpoint, that's fine. But I can't have you in the game if you're betting on baseball. I mean, I can't have you as a hitting instructor. And as I think we touched upon the other day, I think it's very strange to have Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire before him as hitting instructors. I don't think that Bonds needs to be ostracized either, but a guy with the most sophisticated steroids program knows how to evade detection as well as anybody alive, is now going to be in contact with your young hitters. It seemed a little odd to me.
You'll laugh about that. You'll laugh about that because I was doing a show in Miami. I was in Miami the other day, and this subject came up. You know, one of the things that was a condition that the Cardinals put forth to Mark McGwire when he became the hitting coach of the Cardinals. He's since moved on. He's now a bench coach in San Diego.
Right.
But when Mark McGwire came back to the Cardinals, Tony La Russa was still involved. There was a discussion that said, you can't have this hanging over your head. And Mark McGwire unburdened himself. He went on MLB Network and he copped to it.
Mm-hmm.
I have always said, and this was a big argument in the early part of the 2000s, I thought Mark McGwire got a raw deal. Jose Canseco tried to extort him, and whether he did steroids or not, to single him out when there were so many other people, and the fact of the matter was, is there was never any tangible evidence. There is not there was not a drug test. Mark McGwire broke Roger Maris's home run record. Bud Selig could have come down onto the field with a megaphone and shouted, "Don't vote for it! Don't cheer for him! He's on steroids!" And they still couldn't have tested him. There was nothing they could have done. Mark McGwire didn't have to be at that congressional hearing. In 2005, do not have a congressional hearing about the state of sports and bring in a guy who'd been retired for 4 years. He was irrelevant. The only reason why he was there was because Canseco threw him out of the bus, under the bus, and if Canseco got paid $10,000, $20,000, whatever blood money Mark McGwire could have chosen to pay Jose Canseco, he's not in that book. And yep. The fact of the matter is, up until that moment, Mark McGwire felt this compelled need to unburden himself. He copped to the whole thing. He said, I did it. I'm guilty.
Yeah.
Now, Barry Bonds, Jeffrey Loria, is not going to make Barry Bonds do anything close to it. Do you think Barry Bonds is going to have one press conference where he says, you can ask anything you want, this subject's not coming up again? I have covered baseball for 19 years. I don't interview hitting coaches that often.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely true. No, I understand everything you're talking about. And, you know, McGwire, yes, Canseco, and we all owe Jose Canseco a great debt, whatever his motivation was, because he'd been right about every single person he mentioned. So we're all grateful for that. But McGwire, as you said, he hit 70 home runs, and then he hit 65 home runs. And his body broke down and all these things. I mean, he I don't know so much if he was singled out. I mean, he was the greatest home run hitter of his time, with the exception of Bonds. And it was directly related to his steroid use. And it changed the record book. And it did all those things. So while somebody like Palmeiro was, you know, he was singled out as well. So you know, whether or not Bonds comes clean, we all know that he did steroids. I mean, it's not really a matter of debate. And whether he would admit it or not, I still don't know how comfortable I'd feel my young hitters have Giancarlo Stanton hanging out with him and all that. It's hard to trust Barry Bonds. And I think he could be a really good hitting instructor. Very well might be. I mean, you know, you don't hit the way he did just by doing steroids. He's obviously a great hitter and very, very talented and smart in his approach to the plate. He drew all those walks, of course, so he could be valuable, but it would still make me nervous. I mean, you know, they're not going to make Lance Armstrong the tour director for the Tour de France, right?
But the testing program's different now. Don't forget, you know,
but
Barry Bonds.
But they caught on. I mean, we had all those guys like Nelson Cruz and all those people, right? Whose names were found.
Kostya, that's where's the offense gone?
But I'm.
The game has suffered. The game has suffered exponentially. I'm not advocating steroids, but if there's a steroid crisis going on, it is the worst steroid crisis ever. These guys are getting robbed.
No, I'm not saying that there's a steroid crisis now. I totally think we're past the steroid era. But I don't think that the testing, and I think the testing is a very good to have in, and hats off to baseball to finally come around and put in a very tough testing, and I all agree that. But we haven't exactly, you don't have major leaguers testing positive, right? I mean, Johnny Peralta and Nelson Cruz and all those guys were basically ratted out, right? And so, yet they all passed the drug test. It makes you just wonder how good the drug testing actually is. Now, I agree that baseball has done a good job of getting steroids. If I don't think it's completely out of the game, but limiting it, and that's true. And maybe baseball is suffering along with the premium on strikeout pitchers and all that. But nonetheless, to me, if we think, hey, what Mark McGwire and the rest did is okay, then that's what we think. That's fine. But it's not really an issue about whether they did it or not, right?
Do Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, I put those two together. I put them on a different level because not only were they the best at what they did, but they also had court cases. I mean,
right, exactly.
They both had the mountain of evidence, whether it was upheld in court. Do Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds ever get in the Hall of Fame?
I don't think so. I think Bonds has a chance. you know, it gets back to the same thing. They're there on the ballot. They're getting about 35-40%. I mean, you talk to a lot of baseball people. I think that's about right. There's about that number of people who think, yeah, they should go in anyway, and about the 60% or so who say, nah, we can't let somebody in that we know cheated. Now, you know, it becomes difficult when you get to guys like Piazza and you get guys like Pudge Rodriguez, who there's no concrete evidence, but there's a lot of suspicion. But in the case of those two, it's pretty clear.
And, yeah, but there was suspicion on Craig Biggio.
Yeah, absolutely. No question. I mean,
he got in.
I don't know how to answer that. It's a really, really, really tough decision. And it's a tough decision to make. And I wish there was a black and white. So if people want to vote for Bonds and Clemens, they have every right to. And there they are. And I hear the argument. And they're getting a chance. I just think that there's enough resentment towards what that did to the fabric of baseball. I mean, in this era, particularly now in this era of advanced metrics, one of the great things about baseball that you can the game, as much as it's changed, it hasn't changed all that much. And you can put people, you can judge their OPS, you can judge their RBIs, and you still have guys like Babe Ruth and Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle showing up with the guys of today. But there's a pocket, there's a very small period of history that was completely distorted by the use of these drugs. And that's what I think people have a hard time getting around. And that's what makes it so difficult.
It's a fascinating discussion. It's a fascinating realm. All right, so I asked you the Bonds-Clemens question. I'll ask this finally. Does Pete Rose eventually get into the Hall of Fame? Does it happen posthumously? Does it happen because of a change in the rule? Does it ever happen? Do you ever see a scenario in our lifetime that Pete Rose is in the Hall of Fame?
I'm going to say yes, but I would think that not in the foreseeable future. And so I don't know whether it's going to happen in his lifetime or not. But I don't think that the current board at the Hall of Fame is likely to move very soon. It's going to take some change to happen. But I think that at some point that will happen, and there will be, I don't want to say forgiveness, but there'll be a thought that Pete does belong there and he'll get in. Maybe that's 10 years away. Maybe that's 20 years away. Maybe that's 30 years away.
Maybe we'll have the flying car.
But not in the near future. Yeah, maybe we will. I like the idea. We'll have Pete's son drive to the ceremony in his hovercraft. I like it.
Yeah, the great Hall of Fame in the International Space Station or something. Kostya, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I'm so glad we connected. I'm so glad they had us on that television program together. I look forward to doing much more of these. These debates are just fascinating, and that's why I believe in podcasts. I think that, you know, people are going to download this. They're going to have a great time with it. And I really look forward to many more interactions in the future. Thanks so much, man.
Me too, Seth. Anytime. Really enjoy it. Great to be on with you. Have a happy holiday.
Quick, before people let you go, how can people find Pete Rose and American Dilemma?
Oh, thank you. You can find it on Amazon, Pete Rose and American Dilemma. My website is Kostya Kennedy, KostyaKennedy. .com. Really, you can find a book through any, wherever you might buy your books.
Barnes & Noble, iBooks, the whole thing. I have the iBook for that. Very cool. Great stuff, as always, and we really appreciate it. For those of you listening, thank you so much for subscribing. Please leave us a review on iTunes. We've got many big plans for the podcast coming up in the new year. There's a really good chance we're going to be doing a lot of these coming up. And guys like Kostya are going to be a big part of it. Thanks for downloading. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you real soon.
If you want me to stay, I'll be around today to be available for you to see. I'm about to go, and then you'll know, for me to stay, I got to be me. You'll never be in doubt, that's what it's all about. You can't take me for granted and smile. Count my days, I'm gone, forget reaching my phone, because I promise I'll be gone for a while. And you have been the kind of person
ever be late when you're my woman, taking up my time.